Hey guys, welcome. Glad none of you flew away yesterday. Had a Wizard of Oz experience. It was fun to be up here last night with a bunch of pre-marrieds, and we were kind of in and out of stairwells right before then and weren't sure if it was going to go down, if we were going to have activities up here last night. It ended up being a great night, even though it was almost kind of the end of the world just, you know, a couple hours before. And so it's fun to be back up here with no stress in this room the next night. So. Hey, tonight, I'll tell you what we're going to talk about in just a second. So probably 2-3 years ago, I was having lunch with someone who's become a good friend of mine. His name is Ron Deal, and he's kind of the Yoda figure of step families, you know, and thinking and research and things like that from a Christian perspective. And so he's written several books. One of them is called Smart Step Families. And so if you are a blended family, I highly recommend that book. And so he's done some really good thinking about some of the special just kind of concerns and struggles that a blended family would have. It's hard enough to be married in a traditional way, first marriage, no kids. That's tough enough. And then when you layer multiple kids from previous marriages, ex-spouses, we know it just gets exponentially more difficult. And so Ron's done some really good thinking on that. And just a guy that I really, really respect and knows a lot more about relationships than I do. And so we're having lunch. And we're just kind of talking about how couples get better, what are some of the characteristics. And so he kind of pauses and he puts his fork down and he says, you know, the more I think about it, here is what I think the number one predictor of marital satisfaction and whether a couple will get well. And I remember just kind of leaning forward, you know, really hoping. Now that I think about it, I had probably two thoughts. One was, I'm really curious about what it is that he's going to say, because this will be good. You know, I'm sitting with a very wise person. And secondly was, I probably know one of the answers he's going to give. And so as soon as he says something, I'll be able to weigh in and kind of give some witty thoughts or something genius to kind of tag onto that. And he'll be really impressed, right? And so he says, you know what it is? It's humility. Well, you can't really brag after, you know, he just says humility after that. It doesn't work well. But I remember just being just kind of slack-jawed, like, really? Like, I was expecting forgiveness, communication, you know, something else. And he said, you know, humility to him was one of the things that was like the best predictor of marital satisfaction and success and turnaround stories and marriages. And so I remember just kind of being really perplexed by that. And so I just began to think about in the next coming weeks as I sat with couples that were doing really well, I would just ask that. I mean, what's my perception of them in regards to humility? And I noticed a pattern, which shouldn't be too surprising to us, that the couples that were doing really well, that enjoyed being married, they were able to communicate well, they were just doing great. Both of them exhibited humility towards each other. And then conversely, those who weren't doing so well, one or both of them really struggled with pride and kind of seeing themselves as the most important person in the relationship, which is, I mean, painfully obvious, but I remember just having such an aha moment a few years ago around that. And so tonight, that's what I want to talk about, is just humility. And so what is humility? And in your books, I think we say it's not thinking less of yourself, it's just thinking of yourself less. Not thinking less of yourself. It's not self-deprecation. It's not saying, I'm not worthy, I'm no good, all those kind of things. It's just thinking of yourself less and not seeing yourself as the most important person in the relationship, not thinking of yourself as the center of all that goes on in your home, but instead learning how to defer and seeing the other person as more important. So classically, one of the best verses about that is 1 Peter 5:5. And it says this, clothe yourselves, all of you, with humility towards one another. For God opposes the proud, but gives grace to the humble. Clothe yourselves, all of you, with humility towards one another. And it's so interesting, he doesn't say, be humble, go do humility. He says, put it on. Clothe yourselves in this humility. And the Greek there is, the whole clothing idea is really one that you would use when you talked about a servant putting on an apron before he would go and serve. And so before the servant went to go serve his master or go serve someone else, he would kind of put his apron around him, and then he would go do what servants do. Which in the Holy Week should remind us of John 13. You guys remember on Thursday, Thursday in the upper room, the last time God incarnate is going to be with all his disciples, what does he do? He clothes himself with a towel and serves his disciples. And it's the same way we're supposed to put on this humility. We're supposed to kind of wrap ourselves in this humility. And it's to be a posture and an attitude we have towards one another. We don't really do humility, but we posture ourselves and wrap kind of everything we do in that humility. And kind of the question then becomes, well, how do you become humble? How do you do humility? And for me, I think the starting place is appropriate this week is the cross. The starting place is a cross. And to see us all as the reason for the cross. Romans 3:23, a lot of us know that verse. For all have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. So what that means, it's my sin and it's my wife's sin that put Christ on the cross. So this week, you know, 2,000 years ago, as he's walking toward the cross, it's what I've done, and it's what my wife has done that's contributing to this whole series of events. And so neither one of us is any better, because both of us are deeply in need of God's forgiveness, because we're both so sinful, right? Nobody can brag at the cross. Nobody can. And when I think about bragging, I think about our kids. We went skiing this spring break. It was the first time I'd ever taken my kids skiing, and I'd been a youth pastor before, and I'd taken, you know, all these other bratty kids skiing, and I remember just thinking, man, someday I'm going to take my own kids. It's going to be awesome. So even before I was married, that's just something I really look forward to go skiing. And so it was just, the whole thing just kind of fell together, and we're off, and we're going skiing. I'm telling Pam, I was like, can you believe this? We're going to go skiing. I was so excited. Felt so blessed. And so we're going to ski the next day, and we go and we're on our way to get our gear, and somewhere, I guess the words came out of my mouth, hey, you know what we could do tonight is just get them all out somewhere, strap them all in, and just kind of let them get a feel for what's going on, you know, and then let them kind of get a head start on that. And so they heard that. Right. And so they're all like, yeah, let's do that. And so we go down to this golf course when nobody's looking, and we strap them, you know, we kind of strap them all in. And my youngest son, he's eight. He's first in line, wants to go. And so I'm sitting there. He's got his boots on, and I strap him in, and I say, OK, buddy, here's how this is going to go. It's real, real slow incline. I said, you can do this. We're going to make like a pizza slice. You know, if you guys remember learning how to ski or teaching other kids, you know, to ski, it's pizza is slow, French fries are fast, right? I mean, kids get fast food analogies. So we're going to make pizza slice, you know, and let's don't use our poles. I want my poles, Dad. I need my... You don't need your poles, buddy, because we're just going to go, I need my poles. Okay, fine. You have your poles, right? Now, mind you, they weren't even... We were just going to the ski shop. It was over spring break. It's nice and warm. They didn't have any gear on. And so he's sitting in shorts and a t-shirt, no socks in his ski gear, you know, with his poles ready to go. And so I'm trying to talk to him, and he's literally just kind of like beating me off. Like, I've got this, you know, I've got this. And I've taught lots of kids to ski before. I mean, I was looking forward. This was going to be a, you know, made for TV moment, and he is having none of it. He wants to go. And so I really was just frustrated. I was like, as he kept pushing me, I was like, go ahead, pal. And I just let him go. And sure enough, he went straight, turned off, and went right into a snow embankment. So he's in shorts, and he's standing in snow up to his thighs, screaming his head off. He's just screaming his head off. And so I did what any loving dad would do. I said, hey, pal, I'll be with you in a minute, man. And and I went, and I suited up one of his sisters, one of the other guys that was with us. I mean, I think he probably just couldn't handle Hudson yelling anymore, and he just went over there and just kind of picked him up and put him back over there. So we get out there the next day, and Emmy, who's our youngest, you know, she'd done okay. And I said, okay, Emmy, here's what we're going to do. We got up the bunny slope. So we're not going to go down this hill. All we're going to do is just veer left. We're going to go left until we stop. Can you do that? Got it, Dad. pizza slice, got the pizza slice, let's go. Well, you know where this goes, man. She goes, you know, tips downhill, French fries, and she is gone, man. She is gone. So now I'm pulling, trying to catch up with her. I was like, pizza slice, you know. And she, just sheer terror is on her face. She can't stop. She has no poles, and she I'm talking, but she is not hearing, man. She is just flowing. This is the first ever. This is the first run ever that she's had, and she's just hauling down there, just totally terrified, you know. And as a dad, I'm like, well, I could knock her over. I don't know. That might be better. She's gonna run into something or somebody. It was pretty scary. And so she finally, man, just an epic spill, and skis, like, literally, I didn't realize it at the time, but she's laying on her skis, one foot this way, one this way. She was in a ton of pain, and she says, "Dad, take me home. I'm done. First run of the first day, I'm done." You know, it's like, baby, it's like, we just got here. I'm done. You know, she's yelling. So we went on. We ended up having it was actually a really, 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 really great time. But here's what's funny. We get back the first night back, and I'm tucking my boys in, and my youngest son is on the bottom bunk, and he said, "Hey, Dad, who do you think caught on the fastest? Like, really? Like, who do you think was the best skier out there, you know?" And, man, I was just laughing, thinking about all the escapades that had just happened, you know? And so I bit my tongue as a dad, and I was like, oh, yeah. Man, I thought everybody did good. And I'll be doggone, I don't go in my daughter's room, and Emmy's on the top bunk, and she says, "Hey, Dad, like, who do you think seriously caught on the fastest?" You know, so I gave the same line, closed the door, and just internally was like, that is the funniest thing I've ever heard, that a beginning skier would want to brag about just how awesome they were, right? And I was like, dude, were you guys not out there? You know, were we not on the same trip? You guys are terrible. You're horrible. I was there. Nobody was better or best. You were all terrible. And as beginning skiers don't brag. There's nothing. Neither one of them were better than the other. And in marriage, nobody is better than another. I mean, we are all sinners. It's way worse than beginning skiing. We were all wretched. The Bible says we were enemies. We were separated. We were not His people. We were alienated. We were all equally as terrible. Okay, so nobody has the one-up position in our marriage. And that is a starting place, I think, of humility. Okay, it's a starting place. We started in the same state. We were saved in the same way. And we're going to end up in the same place. Right? We're saved in the same way, Ephesians 2, 8, and 9. We contributed nothing to our salvation. We received the grace of God. So nobody's better. Nobody brought something else that the other person didn't bring other than their sinful state, sinfulness and neediness, and we received God's grace. Both you and your spouse, neither one is better. And then if you're believers, the Bible says that we are joint heirs with Christ. So both of you will end up in the same place. There's no levels in heaven. No one gets a bigger house closer to the throne. There's no preferred parking. We're all going to the same place, and it will not matter once we get to see the face of God, right? So we started in the same place. We're saved in the same way, and we end in the same place. That is the nature and the basis and the beginning of humility. We're all level, and we're all needy of God's grace. Okay, so what does it look like? What does humility look like in action? And I'll give you some thoughts on what that looks like. But to me, when I think about humility in marriage, there's one man that I think about. And so this isn't him, but Jim Elliot, if you guys if you know that name, Into the Spear and Through the Gates of Splendor. What's the other marriage? Is that the book or the other movie that was made? I think those are two. So Jim Elliot, Wheaton College, and took some of his buddies. They went down to South America and began to kind of try to reach this unreached people group called the Aka Indians, who eventually killed killed them. They landed, and the Auk Indians were kind of savages, and they came out and killed Jim and all of his buddies. And so, 1956, it was a huge deal. Pam, one year, bought me the Life magazine from back there. It was like 10 or 12, I think it was 10 pages, just recounting the story. It was an international story. And so, Elizabeth Elliot is the wife, and she wrote about Jim's kind of experience. And a book called Through the Gates of Splendor. And that was a book that God really used to change my life. And I'd gotten the relationship with God piece down. I understood that. But when I read that, I thought, man, this whole following God thing is not a joke. And Luke 9:23, if anyone would come after me, he must deny himself and take up his cross. That could even mean my life. And that was just a really, really pivotal book in my life and in my spiritual growth. And so Elizabeth Elliot wrote that. It was huge for me. Elizabeth Elliot also wrote a biography about Amy Carmichael, who was a missionary in India that had a big impact on Pam. And so, and then the rest of the story with Elizabeth Elliot, she actually went back to this tribe that killed her husband, she and some other women, and led them all to Christ. It's an amazing story. God is, most of those folks are still walking with God. Really, really cool story if you're not aware of it. So you can imagine, and not only that, but our kids were changed by those books. Our two kids are actually, two girls are named after them. So our youngest is Emerson Elliott, Elliott after the Elliots, and our oldest is Madison Carmichael, after Amy Carmichael, that Elizabeth Elliott wrote that book. And so, I mean, you can imagine how excited we were. Our friends Matt and Sonia McEwen had Elizabeth Elliott over to their house and said, "Hey, do you guys want to come over?" And I was like, "Man, are you kidding me? I mean, that's unbelievable." And I remember just being, in the car driving over there, so excited. I'm going to get to meet Elizabeth Elliot. And actually, on the way, I said, I want to meet her. Obviously, that'd be really, really cool. But there's someone else that I really want to meet, and it's her husband. So Elizabeth Elliot has been married three times. So her first two husbands died. So a brave guy named Lars married her for the third time. And so Lars' existence through their marriage has been basically to travel around with Elizabeth and listen to her talk about the exploits with her first husband, his death, and the ministry she had before Lars. So Lars would work the book table. Lars would carry the books in and out. He would do all the bookings. He would answer all the emails and the questions. And as Elizabeth even began to kind of tail off in terms of her just kind of intellectual capacity, Lars ran the whole deal, pushing books and the story of a man he's never met that his wife was married to. And I just went up to him and I said, "Hey, obviously your wife is a rock star hero of us, of ours," and told him the story of our kids and the impact. I said, "But I've always wanted to meet you and just shake your hand and just say, man, when I think about humility, when I think about somebody putting someone first, putting someone above themselves, thinking about someone else's interest and not looking for the spotlight, but actually trying to push someone else in it, I think of you." And I thought Elizabeth would be my hero. And I've actually always wanted to meet you. And I just want to say, man, way to go. And thank you for modeling for me what humility looks like. I think that's what humility in action looks like. It was a really cool moment for us. So what would it look like for you? What would it look like if tomorrow you woke up and you said, "God, I want to be humble. Will you change my heart? I understand that I'm no better than my wife, that I'm deeply in need of your grace and your forgiveness. I'm going to put this humility on, and now I'm going to go walk in this today." What would it look like? And here's some thoughts. It might mean that you serve your spouse's needs. You could get them coffee. You could go put gas in their car or do something for them that they normally have to do around the house. It might mean that you admit that you are wrong. Something they haven't brought up, but you knew you were wrong, to go to them to apologize and ask forgiveness for something that you did in the past. It could mean moving toward them either physically or emotionally, having a conversation you don't want to have, or doing something physically that wouldn't be your first thought. It could mean that you look for ways to appreciate or celebrate them around the dinner table to go, "You're not going to believe how amazing your mom or dad is." This is what they mean to us. Aren't we blessed to have them? Not to take the spotlight off you and put it on them, and look for ways just to appreciate them and say thanks. It might mean to simply be kind in your communication, to do a great job listening, to not communicate just to show off or to get them to agree with you or to be interested in what you're doing, but instead to return the favor and listen and ask probing questions and connect with them over conversations. It might mean saying something, saying no to something you want to do or something that you want to purchase, so that you'll have either time or money to do something that they want to do. It could be overlooking something that your spouse did, or not getting angry with it, just to let it go. To understand that God's been amazingly gracious and forgiving towards you, and we can't not do the same to our spouse. And it could mean doing something that needs to get done that they don't even know about, and not even telling them that you did it. Just to humbly serve and sacrifice without anybody knowing in secret. Whatever it looks like for you will be different than what it looks like for me. And it's really interesting. How do you talk about humility, right? Get up here and brag about how humble I am. So to share stories about humility is actually pretty difficult to do. But I'll just tell you, this week for me, a couple weeks ago, Pam and I had gone on a run, and it was just, you know, we were catching up, and Pam was saying, hey, you need to do this, and remember this phone call, and remember this, and I remember just being just kind of really frustrated and angry, especially as we got done with this, run. I was like, do I have four things to do, or do I have five? I can't remember, and I went in there, I remember writing them down, and I came out, I said, you know what, and I didn't have a lot of energy behind it, but effectively, this is what I said. I was like, man, if I'm going to exercise and be with you, I just want to exercise and be with you. I don't need a laundry list of to-do items when we go. You can tell me those, but don't put those one in the same. I mean, that just totally killed my run for me. I was halfway nice. I mean, as nice as you can say that, you know, it's kind of. But I was like, this is not what I had in mind to go run for you with you. And so yesterday, I didn't have lunch, and Pam and I needed to prepare for last night. So I went home and I ran. I'm just totally convicted about that comment from a couple weeks ago. And I just, the first thing in, you know, it's like, hey, you know, and before she could go, I said, hey, forgive me for a couple weeks ago. And that's ridiculous, you know, that we can't be together, and whatever is important to you, you can't talk about. I'm saying that I'm the most important person. The way I want to do things and have conversations is the way it's going to go. And I've just chosen to put myself in the center. That is not okay. Please forgive me. Let's go on a run. If you want to give me 100 things to do, that's great. You know, so we laced up. We went. Come back. I didn't even have one thing to do on my list. So humility, you know, mileage may vary, results may vary, but it worked out well for me yesterday. So I'll recommend it. Okay, but that's what it looked like for us. Okay, so here's the deal. I thought about this. Just kind of in closing. Can God change you? Absolutely. I know firsthand. And I would say kind of pride would be one of the things that if you ask people 10, 15 years ago, hey, what do you think about John McGee? That would have made it in everybody's list at some level. Like a pride, you know. And so I think now it still shows up, but it keeps getting bumped down further, maybe from one to another number. And I've seen it firsthand. In others. And so one of my buddies sent me a text tonight, and he said, hey, I'd forgotten. He said, hey, thanks for calling me the most arrogant man you know, because God has really used you to transform my life. And I'd forgotten. And what was so funny is he reminded me of that. And I can't remember ever saying that, because I would never say that about him now. He's one of the most humble men that I know. And I'm watching him serve and love and sacrifice for his wife and his family, and grow and repent and ask for forgiveness. Arrogance is never something I would even utter about this guy or even think. And yet that was something that marked him then, does not mark him now. Okay. And I would agree with Ron, man, humility is a big deal. much bigger deal. You open up marriage books, you won't see that as a chapter heading, but it is huge. So you guys all know that the goal of marriage is oneness. We've talked about that over and over again. It's to become one. Not one person, right? But one. And as I thought about it, I feel like when people are humble, it becomes like two incredibly powerful magnets. And it just you can't help but move towards each other when you're humble. There's issues to work through, to be sure, but you just can't help moving towards each other. And conversely, man, when one or both of you are arrogant, it's like it reverses the polarity. And it becomes incredibly hard. If you guys have ever tried to push big magnets together, can you do it? Sure. But man, it is really, really difficult. As you kind of shake and everything, it just doesn't want to go together. I think pride is that. Humility from both parties really, really promotes oneness and might be one of the best paths there. Okay? So it'd be good to talk about tonight. Hey man, how are we doing in humility? If I was going to be more humble, what would that look like? How, you know, encourage each other? How have you seen each other grow in humility? This really is a big deal. Okay? Be great for you to talk about.